Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, how geography shapes the way we talk. Last week, as we did our flyover series of shows in different cities along the Mississippi River, I heard callers who used words and phrases and language that seem particularly unique to their communities. There are phrases in Louisiana, for instance, that probably don't make much sense to Northerners like us. So we asked our favorite language guy, Anatoly Lieberman, to come in and give us the lowdown on colloquialisms. How do they develop? Why do they stick? What do they say about us as English speakers and Americans? So as Anatoly joins me in the studio, I'd like to hear about the words and the phrases you're aware of that are unique to a certain part of the country. What do we say here in Minnesota and in the Midwest that Southerners and Westerners wouldn't get? Kathy Werzer reminded me of the word bubbler for water fountain, which I had never heard until I moved to Minnesota. So words and phrases that are colloquial to the part of the country that we live in or a different part of the country that you lived in. Maybe you come here from the South and you've carried with you some really fun colloquialisms from the place that you grew up in. I'd love to hear that. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Anatoly Lieberman, professor of languages at the University of Minnesota, author of many, many books, including Word Oranges, Orange. Oh my gosh. Anatoly, jump in. I'm trying to say the word origins and
origins,
I can't.
But for some reason, you say something like oranges.
Word oranges and
oranges,
how we know
that,
them.
I like it very much. It's wrong, but it's probably even better than what is correct.
Oh my gosh. It's been a long week. Welcome. Good
Thank
to have
you
here.
Thank you very much.
I want to grab a call here from Lucy right away because I don't know if this is it's a colloquial way of creating a sentence, but maybe not a phrase. But hi, Lucy. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I also have a degree in linguistics, so my ear is there, and it's a matter of the syntax as opposed to a phrase.
Right.
You, like I, came from east of Chicago, and maybe you experienced the same thing. My family mocks me for this. Ending a sentence with the word then, they say, for a Minnesotan to say, are you coming? It's just too sharp. You have to say, not only are you coming then, are you coming then? And my family will say, no, Ellen, we're coming now. The sentence preferably should be bookended with so at the beginning and then at the end. And just for good measure, maybe throw in the word along. So, are you coming along then? It took forever to ask a direct question. And my family, when I go back home, mocks me constantly for that one.
I really think you've got something here when you said it's about the sharpness. It's about, you know, east of the Mississippi, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We're more direct. I mean, we're more used to that kind of direct communication.
They will tell you that we are rude and we speak too fast. On the other hand, if we go down south, they think we speak too fast, which is amazing to me because Minnesotans are so slow.
So glad you called. Anatoly, what do you make of this?
Well, that's all very familiar. Of course, I've heard those remarks many times. Let us not forget that what we call American English has been influenced so strongly by non-English speakers. So they're native now, those features, but that doesn't mean that they come from the depth of the history of English, especially with the so, which begins there. And you mentioned bubbler, for example, which is now a parade example of Wisconsin versus Minnesota. Everybody who speaks about dialects says these things. And before I say something about so, let me say that there is a great book. It's a multi-volume book, which is one of the joys of the world that is interested in language, called The Dictionary of American Regional English.
Ah, okay.
D-A-R-E, the acronym is DARE. The book has been finished, not the book, but the project has been finished. It lasted many decades, and it's a great book and a wonderful collection of volumes where you find all kinds of things that are entirely foreign to you in Minnesota here or to anyone, because everything that you can think of has a local name somewhere. Again, some of the parade examples, not in syntax, is the word ramp, which you have probably heard many times. Ramp in Minnesota is not what ramp is everywhere else in the world. Ramp is only the driveway or part of the road that takes you to the ramp. I remember how I asked one somewhere, where is the ramp? You are on the ramp. I said, no, I mean the ramp. He said, well, you are on the ramp. What kind of ramp do you want? And it seems very Minnesotan. No one else calls the whole building a ramp. And menus are of the same type. In New York or in San Francisco or in Los Angeles, your familiar dishes have different names. With syntax, it's harder to pinpoint what the cause or the reason is. This so is so extremely German when they begin sentences with so. It's not entirely clear where it came from. Some other things have been pinpointed much better, as, for example, our famous Are You Coming With, another parade example.
I think somebody was going to call and talk about that. Yeah.
Of course. It's like a bubbler. It bubbles all over the place, of course. And it's either Swedish or German, because both in Swedish and in German, you finish your sentence with this med or mit, which is with, and it's probably a so-called translation loan from German. So with syntax, it's harder, but with words, thousands and thousands of words. You read DARE, the Dictionary of American Regional English. It reads like a thriller, actually much more interesting than a thriller, because at the end of the thriller, you know who done it. And here you always have new things. So it's a joy to speak about.
It's a book I need to get put on my desk.
It's not a book. It's I think, four or five volumes. But it's absolutely wonderful. I don't know how expensive it is today. It's digitized, and you can probably subscribe to it in its digital form. But it's one of the joys of the world to see how Americans speak and what they call different parts of anything, pavement, road, ramp, you just call it.
Call here from Barb in Lake Elmo. So, Barb, does that explanation that Anatoly just gave about the want to come with make sense to you? How that happened?
Absolutely. Yep. That's definitely an expression that my family talks about a lot, because we're not native Minnesotans, but we hear that a lot. And we keep telling our kids, don't say that. Say, do you want to come with me?
Yeah. So you're saying that is a holdover from German
or Swedish
settlers or Swedish settlers.
Come to me or kommst du mit. This is absolutely correct, standard Swedish German.
And it just carried into the
phrasing into
the English.
And it was carried over into
wow.
this. Into
huh.
this
I've into, wondered into about English. That for so long.
Yeah, and that's a common thing. That's the usual thing. You speak your native language, you learn another language, and you begin to transfer things from your old language, and your children think that that's the norm, and so it goes.
Benudo says on Twitter here, words and phrases from my small hometown in Iowa, taverns for what others call sloppy joe or loose meat sandwiches.
Well, that's such a very common thing with dishes. It's always like that. You never know what you order if you leave home. Whenever you order things, always ask the server, what exactly is it? The question will surprise the person. Everybody knows it. We always think that if we know it, everybody does. But never order things with exotic names. You never know. Your Joe may be sloppier than you expect.
Are colloquialisms usually slang or
no.
or not?
No,
okay.
No. No, it's impossible to define slang. About 150 years ago, slang was defined as something vulgar, something that people would never, good, educated and nice people would never say. Slang was a term of vituperation. But this is no longer so. Also, some slang is so common. When you're asked whether you have children, you will say, yes, I have two children. But when you speak about them at home, you say the kids are at home.
Yeah.
Kid is slang. And it's absolutely innocuous slang. There is nothing wrong about
it. Slang has become much more acceptable.
So much so that it has become a colloquialism rather than slang. And the line between a colloquialism and slang is practically impossible to draw because it's the same thing. The difficult thing with slang is what you find in so-called urban dictionary, when you find that absolutely everything has a name you have never heard. That's what they say in this type of community, that type of community. Oh, yes, that is this slang, that slang. You are an absolute foreigner at home. But other than that, colloquialism are not slang, and slang is so common. For example, when people say, oh, yes, that's cool, that's slang in a way, because that's not the way we'll write it. And there is nothing wrong about it unless it is overused.
Rob says rubber binder for the commonly expressed word rubber band has been geolocated to its origins in South Minneapolis.
Correct.
What?
Correct.
You've heard of this?
Oh, many times.
Really?
First I thought, I probably misused the word, but then I keep hearing it all the time. Bands and binders have really exchanged places.
I didn't know that there was one specific neighborhood in South Minneapolis that uses the word rubber binder.
That's how it all happens. Then it spreads. If you have a popular store, then very soon something that was so shockingly local will become common knowledge. And then you will hear everybody knows it.
Hey, if you're getting a busy signal on the phone lines, call us back. Anatoly Lieberman is in. He reminds me it has been since early January, which I can't believe, but it's really good to have him in the studio again. We're talking about colloquialisms, and I'm asking to hear from you about the ones that, I don't know, you grew up with, and when you use them in other places, you realize they sounded a little exotic, or you've brought your own colloquial phrases and words to a different place, different culture. Those of us who are not from Minnesota experience this. I'd love to hear from you if you've moved here from somewhere else, what that was like.
Not to interrupt you, Carrie, but you see tenuous the difference is between what is local and not. The words you have grown up with, that's perfectly standard English. And are coming with is a localism.
Yeah.
So
the way I use that phrase, you're saying?
Well, you said words you have grown up with.
Right.
That's absolutely standard English. But are you coming with immediately tells you where you are from.
Good point. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. If you're somewhere else in the region and on Twitter, at Carrie NPR to Aaron in Minneapolis. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, good morning.
I'm glad to have you on the line. You moved here from somewhere else, is that right?
Yeah, I moved here from New Orleans in 1996.
Perfect.
And I have the funny stories about all your typical pop and stuff like that. And y'all, it's funny, though, the majority of all my friends all say y'all now. That was one thing that rubbed off on people over the years. But the one thing that I thought was, and maybe it's not a colloquialism, but we have this thing in New Orleans, and it's called a yat. And a yat just says things completely differently. We have, like, our own type of dialect almost. And so one of the things I noticed always caught people off guard when I first got here is the way we make one word out of four. So I might say, what's the date of today? But back then I would say, what's the date of today? Or how's your mom and them? How's your mom and them? And it's one whole word, but instead really it's just like a phrase of just like something nice that you would say to somebody. But it's like a real word at that point.
Okay,
like,
but what's a yat? I mean, you're saying you're slipping that in between separate words?
A yat is like someone who's from a different part of New Orleans, I guess you would say. They're the people that have that really strong accent. So when you went out there, if you talk to people from Kenner or Chalmette or little other smaller towns just outside of New Orleans but still considered the New Orleans area, they have this really weird draw, and they talk really fast, but it's a draw at the same time. It's really interesting. If you go on YouTube, you type in yat or dialects of New Orleans, they have like a 45 8-minute-long movie just on.
Really?
Just on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
You know, I think I experienced that. I had this great Uber driver who was from a small town down near the coast. And I think I missed like every fourth or fifth word in what she was telling me, kind of the story of her life. And I thought, what is wrong with me that I can't? I think I was in the middle of a yat right there.
Yeah.
Having
you
that experience.
Probably got a yat. Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
All that is so familiar. First of all, I have to say that these things, which seem simply funny or interesting to us, have been explored extremely well. Yale, for example, has occupied many serious and, I would say, rather dull linguists who have written articles and even books about it. In general, all those things which we discuss, laugh at or about have been known for a long time, and there is a branch of linguistics called sociolinguistics. Sociolinguists study exactly such things. For example, the hateful "like" in the middle of a sentence, which is now all American.
Is that colloquial? Did that begin as a colloquialism, you think?
Yes, everything begins like a colloquial. Huh. Colloquialism, probably, because we speak. We don't read or write first. And it began somewhere. It probably began in San Francisco, but nobody knows for sure. And then it spread. Then it became fashionable. My point is that there has been a lot of research on all these subjects. Yale, there have been books about it and articles and what the origin of this Yale is and why it's so. And, of course, it's always funny when you see someone from Texas and the first things you hear is Yale, because that's exactly what you expect. So it's like a shibboleth, and it's funny that that everybody knows it and then you still hear it. The same with the drawl. That's a different thing. That's phonetics. And I don't know how many of our listeners have tried to speak to British speakers in the north of England, for example, in Lancashire or in Yorkshire. Yorkshire is much worse. And speaking to those people is quite a problem. You said you missed every fourth word. I remember the same experience on a bus. Two girls, about 13 years of age, were chatting. That was in Texas. I think it was in Austin. Chatting merrily on a bus. And I felt like an absolute foreigner. Not only did I miss so many words, I couldn't even follow the trend of the conversation. They said something. They constantly giggled. I understand it was all very funny. Not to me.
Mindy said, that will teach you to eavesdrop. Mindy says,
that's right.
I'm a Michigan native, and the way Minnesotans mix up borrow and lend drives me crazy. Me too. I never get this thing
it's
about...
It's not Minnesotan.
What
it's
is it?
It's ubiquitous. It's absolutely everywhere, and I think it's the same thing in Britain, and it has been going on forever and ever and ever.
Wait a minute. Okay, so
yes.
People in the UK are also using
the word borrow
in what I think is the wrong context.
Well, take something like that. You rent a house. And that means what? That you are renting it to somebody or that you are renting it from someone.
Yes.
So these double-weaponed verbs are very dangerous.
Ah.
And lend and borrow both mean give. Of course, the direction is different. And if you are a careful speaker, you avoid these things. But that's not a Minnesotan feature. It's a very common universal thing.
I like that phrase, double-weaponed verbs. I don't
yes.
think you've ever used that before.
No. I coined it on the spur of the moment.
Nicely
excited
done.
Excited by the context.
To Maddie in St. Paul. Hi, Maddie. What are you thinking about?
Hi. I was just kind of taking pause because I grew up with a very international and national family. We're all spread out. My parents travel all the time and bring back foreign people that I get to talk to. And I think the one thing that has intrigued me about language, because I've also lived in several different states, is that it seems like there's an age difference between colloquialisms versus just general chatting. And I think with the advent of social media, a lot of those colloquialisms get picked up in other places. And the fact that we're so transient that it's very common for people in their 20s and 30s to sometimes state hop two or three states for work or such.
Good point.
And travel so often that those colloquialisms seem to disappear because I don't hear them around, and I'm 29, so I don't really hear them around people my age.
Yeah.
But when I think about how I grew up and the words I heard, it was very standard because my parents are from the North, but my grandfather was from Pensacola.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up with thick Southern slang, and the fact that Minnesotans didn't use it was weird to me. But I always think it's interesting that depending on the age, that's when I hear more actual solidified colloquialism.
Boy, excellent point.
You're absolutely right. And slang is age sensitive. We all know that children use something in grade school that they will never use later in middle school and never use in high school. Kindergarten slang is quite different. And you will be thrilled at the age of 6 when you pronounce the word poop, but you will grow out of it, and it's no longer slang, and it will no longer seem amusing to you. And slang and colloquialism, and again, as I say, there is practically no difference between them. It's all a matter of measure. They age and are forgotten very quickly, very soon. I remember how my graduate student, that was about 20 years ago, but it would have been the same thing today, how she said that she didn't understand the movies that her mother enjoyed. And her mother said that she would hardly follow the movies of her daughter's liking because she didn't know slang. I have a friend at the university who is an actor and who knows slang from east to west, from north to south, and I constantly ask him questions, and he invariably says, yes, this word was common in the 50s. It's no longer used today, or I hear it very seldom. Yes, you are right. I'm surprised you know the word, because the word was not used much after such and such a date, and so on. So that's absolutely true. Words age, and colloquialism age especially often and quickly, very fast indeed, and nothing helps that. And that's why it's very hard to follow the language of very young people. They use the words which they think everybody knows. And again, returning to what we talked about a minute ago, about 30 years ago, when the word cool was not so very common, a student, an undergraduate, said to me, that's cool, then looked at me suspiciously because she wasn't sure that I understood the word. And she said, oh, that's very good. I said, don't worry. I know very well what cool means.
Listen to this, Anatoly. Here's Jonathan, and Maddie will find this interesting, too. He says, Carrie, there was a Facebook survey about 15 questions not too long ago that asked you what you called different things, boulevard, mountain lion, soda, and others. It could accurately predict where you lived.
Absolutely so. Mm. The Dictionary of American Regional English reports certain things. How once the police tried to catch a criminal who wanted them. Unfortunately, I don't remember the word because the word means nothing to me, but I remember the context, where the criminal said that he wanted the money to be left on such and such a place near the sidewalk. And he used the word for the corner of a sidewalk that could be, that was known only in one part of the United States.
Huh.
So they figured out where the man was from, caught him because he used a word.
Wow.
He thought that the word was universal knowledge, but it was not. It's like saying, use your money near the bubbler. Here you will be caught.
To Betsy in South Minneapolis. Betsy, what's your story on this?
I am from Memphis, Tennessee, and married a Minnesotan, so that's how I got here.
Okay.
And I noticed that people here do not say the word tumped, but we say it down south.
What is it?
In Memphis. It means, so if you knock something over accidentally, like a cup or something, you know, oh, I tumped over my milk. Oops, you know, whoops, that chair tumped over. You better get it.
So it's with a T, right? It's not I dumped this down the drain or anything like that. It's with a T, U-M-P-E-D.
It's with a T, yeah. And it's usually kind of a minor knockover or spill or fall.
Got it.
Nothing that's big or intentional. And nobody here says it.
When you visit friends and relatives in Memphis, do they find that you've picked up some of the colloquialisms from this area? And you're taking them back there.
I picked it up, and I always say I'm like Madonna, because I just like how she picked up her British accent. That I'll kind of say, oh, you know, or whatever, just kind of draw out my words the way that people here do.
You had kind of a good Swedish-Norwegian thing going on there just when you said that. You know.
Yeah,
you've got
it's super easy to pick up.
Thanks for the call. Good to have it. To Kathy in Minneapolis. Hi, Kathy.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great topic.
Yeah.
I was a military brat, so we grew up all over the place, mainly out east in mid-state New York and Maine.
Yeah.
But the one I called in on is Red Hot. As a child, I knew this as a small lozenge-shaped red candy.
Right.
I worked for a year in Chicago, and down there they called a hot dog with all the toppings a Red Hot.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, you people eat candy for lunch? Come on. the other thing is my uncle who lived in western Minnesota in a small town, this might be something peculiar to the farm country, they would call the main meal of the day dinner, and that would be at noon. That might have something to do with our farm background and, you
right.
know, working in the fields. So I was always very confused that you'd eat a big, heavy meal in the middle of the day. And then, as I mentioned, I grew up out east. I came here and stood up in front of my eighth grade classroom and said, Way Zeta. And, I'm going, and they all broke out laughing. I'm going, what's the problem? It's Way Zeta. Way Zeta. You know, it's just, it,
you were
yeah,
immediately exposed for the foreigner that you were, right?
Well, that's all very familiar, especially, again, forever returning to the problem of food and so on. I remember in Cambridge, in England, which is, of course, not Cambridge, but Cambridge, where we had a guest, and I came in the middle of the dinner, and she said to me, very good tea. Tea, of course, is tea. A very good tea. I knew that tea was some sort of dinner, but I didn't think that soup and things were also tea. So I bowed politely, not quite knowing what to say. She repeated very insistently, very good tea. I again bowed. Then she turned to my son, who was, I think, 12, and said, your father doesn't speak English, does he? He jumped up in irritation and humiliation. And I said, yes, thank you very much. I wasn't quite sure that very good tea meant a three-course dinner.
Yeah. Hey, Anatoly, have you heard the phrase cattywampus, which I had never heard?
Oh, of course.
Okay, Sarah says on Twitter, she says, my Indiana grandfather used cattywampus for this. I have heard it only in particular parts of the country. Is it? It's not widely used, is it?
Okay. No.
Where'd it come from?
The second half comes definitely from the name of some ghost or some evil spirit from some wampus. And the first, I don't remember. I remember that in my blog, I even once wrote a whole post about it. But that was many years ago.
To the phones to Rodolfo in Brooklyn Park. Hey, Rodolfo, thanks so much for waiting. What are you thinking about?
Well, no. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Well, to tell you about me, I'm originally from Mexico City.
Uh-huh.
I came here with a large corporation. And, you know, back in my home country, I would always hear, you know, you bet. I was like, okay, so are you betting on what I'm saying? Are you betting? Or I didn't quite understand the you bet. So when I came here, you know, I not only constantly heard the you bet, but I started to hear the you betcha. So it was such an interesting process for me, not only get acquainted with the you bet affirmation of things, but also, you know, of course, getting acquainted with the different slangs, you know, the hanging in there, the out of the blue, you know, all those slangs that, you know, I was taught a very formal English. I was very fortunate to go to bilingual schools. So those are slangs that you don't hear, you know, when you're taking classes.
Right.
It's not until you move to the country that you truly get acquainted with all, you know, with all the different informal ways of saying things. So that was...
I am so glad you called with You Bet, though, because I heard somebody end an interview a couple weeks ago, and I thought by saying the host said thanks so much, and he said You Bet, and I thought, when did we get to the point where that was a way to say, of course, happy to do it, or you're welcome, or whatever? And we have the guy who can hopefully answer that question right here.
Well, when something is overused, people forget when they should say it and when they should not say it. And then it becomes a kind of universal means of expressing your feelings. This is the same thing as with cool and many other things. You can practically go through life knowing only three or four adjectives. Fascinating, cool, and something like that. Whatever you hear is either cool or fascinating. And you don't have to enrich your vocabulary. You hear something, you say you bet, and you already sound like a very nice guy. And bet you is even better and even stronger than that. And, of course, I hear it all the time, and it's a localism, but it's not entirely Minnesotan, as we have just heard. People say, I do not have the geography, but you bet is rather common. And again, in the Dictionary of American Regional English, you find all those things with maps in every entry, so that you want to know where the you bet is used, you just open it. And returning to what you said a minute ago, on the news we had the word aluminum, and of course it's aluminium, as everybody knows.
Of course, everybody knows it's aluminium.
Everybody knows that's a famous thing. And about those rent and lend and so on, I first read about it, about this mistake, in Fowler's beautiful book, Modern English Usage. It's about the word substitute. Not many people make this mistake, but apparently many more in Britain than in the United States. Instead of saying replace, they say that something was substituted by something. Instead of saying, I substituted...
That's pretty weird. Yeah.
Yes, yes. In this country, it's very unusual. Instead of saying, we substituted... butter for margarine or something like that. They say instead of saying replace, they say substitute. And Fowler says in irritation, it cannot be such a thing. It's either this way or that way. But as you see, it's not always the same thing.
I also hear what Rodolfo was saying about when you learn a new language, you often learn the formal way of that language.
Oh, yes, of
and
course.
Only... When you master some of the colloquialisms, do you feel like you really understand that language?
That's why when foreigners begin to learn English, the first words they learn are swear words. And they think that if they use all those words which are not used by, let us say, by nice people, quote unquote, they sound native. Nothing is more stupid than swearing with an accent.
Zachariah says, Minnesota's been wonderfully enriched in recent years and decades by the arrival of Hmong, Somali, Karen, Mexican, and so many other peoples. Is Anatoly aware of any loan words, phrases, or linguistic influences originating from these communities? It's a good question.
Not at the moment, but I think that I do not have a list to offer or some good examples to offer you, but... Especially when it comes to food items, faith items. That is some things which are deeply ingrained in the life of a certain community. If the community is rather large or very large, as we sometimes have in Minnesota, then these words from restaurants and other, of course, a restaurant is a restaurant in England, and everybody knows in the country of aluminium it's restaurant, from restaurants and so on. You begin to recognize these words, and once you have learned to recognize them, you begin to use them, especially when the situation is proper. We don't have to wait too long before some of these words become common property.
Call here from Jen in Mankato. Jen, you're from somewhere else, yeah? Hey, Jen, are you there? We might have missed Jen. I know people are having to hang on for a long time. Reverend Stiles says on Twitter, I'm from Minnesota, but I lived in Arkansas for 4 years as a kid. Down there, instead of saying, put that away, they say, put that up. Yeah, I heard that when I lived in the South, too. And Reverend Stiles adds, and instead of saying, I'm going to do this, they say, I'm fixin' to do this. And you only address teachers as ma'am and sir. I learned that the hard way. Okay, to Jeff in St. Paul. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how
hey,
are you?
Doing good. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, thank you. So I'm originally from Northeast Michigan. I've been here a little over 10 years, but winter hats, it's a big thing. They call them, well, here, call them like beanies. and different, like, caps. I don't even know. So where I'm from, they're called chooks.
And what?
Like, spelling-wise, I don't know how it's spelled, but I think, like, C-H-O-O-K-S, like chook.
Oh.
Chook.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and people look at me and give me some odd looks when I say, like, that's a nice chook. And they're like, what?
I guess, yeah. I mean, what part of Michigan are you from? Do you think that's colloquial just to one part of the state, too? Never heard that.
Well, I'm from Alpena, Michigan, like northeast lower peninsula on Lake Huron.
Ah, okay.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
One other thing, too, is everyone says lake houses here, and those are cottages. Yeah. If you have a house on a lake, so that's a cottage.
Yeah.
And cabins are in the woods. So we've never, yeah.
I've noticed that, too. That's almost an affectation in some ways, you know, for people to call some big, I don't know, $500,000 house to the lake that they go to a cottage.
Sure, instead of calling it a chateau.
Right. Or a mansion.
Yes.
Here's Kate on Twitter. She says, when I was in Provincetown, I ordered a bump from a bartender. The maitre d' next to him looked horrified, and the bartender looked uncomfortable. I explained in Minnesota a bump is a shot. Evidently, in Provincetown, it's a line of cocaine. Okay, to Anne Marie in Minneapolis. Hi, Anne Marie. Thanks for waiting. How are you?
Hey, no problem. So for me, I grew up in northern Nevada, then went to high school in northern Michigan, college in Southern California,
wow.
And then ended up here in Minnesota.
Wow.
But it's funny because my grandpa was from Minnesota. Some of the things like come with and all of that have always been natural to me. So I didn't notice them when I moved here. And I'd been around people from all over with where I went to high school and college. But then I became a teacher here in Minnesota, and I was teaching my first graders Duck, Duck, Goose. And they all stopped me and said, oh, no, it is not Duck, Duck, Goose. It's Duck, Duck, Gray Duck.
What? No.
They all play Duck, Duck, Gray Duck.
Is that really? Yeah. In the control room, they're telling me yes. Duck, Duck, Gray Duck. I've never heard that.
Isn't
Anatoly,
that weird?
Is that news to you? That's weird.
Not news, but very uncommon. And with what you said some time ago, how did we reach the stage at which you say you're bet instead of you're welcome?
Yeah.
These things change. For example, we have just heard, thank you for waiting, you said, no problem.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
yeah.
Also yeah. Rather new, not very new. And I always wince, especially at a restaurant, when I say thank you and the server says no problem. Well, of course there is no problem. Why should there be a problem? But these things stick to us, so we no longer notice it. And especially the phrase for thank you varies a lot. About 100 years ago, I think to thank you, you were supposed to say, if you please.
Oh.
That is what I find in novels. Then something else and something else. Then your welcome appeared, which I think is an Americanism and now probably known all over the world. And then your bet appeared and no problem. And these things become so common that we're immune to them. We no longer react to them. They don't sound as wrong things. That's the usual thing. It's like the aging of colloquialisms. It's the same thing.
You mentioned some literary traditions here, and as I was preparing for the show, I was thinking about some contemporary writers who have used this tool of colloquialisms so well, like Colson Whitehead and Juno Diaz, using colloquialisms to make their dialogue sound authentic, and it doesn't sound forced. I think there's a fine line in
yes between
in
sounding
writing.
Sounding
right.
Natural and sounding folksy.
Exactly.
Yes, that's right. Very few people can do it well. Most people who do not know them properly overdo these things just to show how up to date they are.
A listener here says on Twitter, over the past decade, I've lived in Boston and Belgium. What I was shocked to find in both places was the density and diversity of colloquial speech and pronunciation in each place.
Yes. Yes. With pronunciation, it's really hard. There is so much variety there. even in one large town, you find, well, New York, of course, is a classic example. You travel from Queens to Brooklyn, and it's like crossing a national border sometimes. So that's the usual thing. And hundreds and hundreds of works have been written about these sub-local dialects. And like Professor Higgins, you can always decide, yes, how is your mother on the right side of such and such a street? How do you know anything about my mother? Never mind how I know about your mother. How is she? Thank you. She's okay.
Right. What's the language you grew up speaking? Russian. Okay. That's Russian. What I thought. Now, when you go back to Russia, can you tell when you hear colloquial speech? Well, can you tell where people are from in Russia?
Two things. First of all, I practically never go to Russia.
Ah.
So there is very little I can say. In my 42 years in the United States, I've been there for three times, I think, and every time as a guest lecturer, so I mainly heard myself. And I know my own Russian very well, so there was nothing new. But I read Russian newspapers sometimes, and the modern Russian language is full of the vilest slang one can imagine. The most uncultured stresses and so on. So people of my age are constantly shocked. But the older you become, the more liable you are to become shocked. So that's
all
right.
Are you saying the actual journalism is full of
everything.
Vile slang?
Everything.
Not just quoting?
Everything. No.
Huh.
No. Well, look at our journalism. Something that you are not allowed to pronounce on NPR. But we all know what I mean.
Yes.
Look at what people say. And this is not the obscenities, but the lowest type of colloquialisms. Also, English is... Russian is full of useless borrowings from English. So instead of using the Russian word for continuation, they will take the word sequel and pronounce it with the Russian accent. So I barely understand these things even when I read them. Oh, I have to translate it back into English to understand what they mean.
Heidi says, the hospital I work at recently tried to train all staff to stop replying to thank you with no problem. Lots of younger generation nurses say it and mean well. I wonder why the hospital felt like that was a priority. It doesn't sound like the kind of communication that really elicits any understanding. I don't know. That'd be interesting to know.
They probably have more free time than they need. That's not the worst thing one can imagine.
Right, working out in the hospital. To Lauren, listening on the road. Hey, Lauren, hi.
Hey, hi.
Hi. What are you thinking about?
Well, when I was a young kid in California, I'm now in Minnesota, I asked the teacher one time how come the word "nother" was never on a spelling test, and I wanted to know if it was spelled N-O or N-U.
And, oh, wow.
That's a common thing. It's a very common thing.
I say that. So, Lauren, do you say the word "nother"? I do, yes. Too.
I mean, I noticed that I do say that, and I'm fully aware that it's not actually a word, but I hear it everywhere.
Everything.
And I'm wondering how it's so accepted, and yet it's obviously not.
Well, everything is a word if it's used. You really can't say that's not a word if everybody knows it. But you're quite right. It's a very common thing. It's not local. It has been going on since probably late Middle English. And it's the same thing that you cited quite correctly. When a word loses its N or adds its N, and instead of an other, people begin to say another, and that's how the word appeared. And you're quite right. Newt is one of such words, which was ute, but from an ute. Umpire is from an umpire, and so we from
just
non
got kind of blurred together.
Blurred together, and there are many such words. So another is a word. I definitely resent the idea that a word is not a word.
I think she's got that. I think Lauren heard that. To Jonathan in Prior Lake. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, great program.
Hi, thanks.
I wanted to share my experience of living in Europe.
Good.
Where I could function using German and Scandinavian languages, but when I did speak English, I was really forced to drop colloquialisms such as good job or on the same page, which were meaningless. And I was really forced to dig into my inner dictionary and use English properly.
That's hard.
I tried to carry that back to living in the U.S.
I mean, it's so reflexive, right, Jonathan?
It is.
It seems like the right phrase for the right moment, right?
Yes, but it's cheap.
Yes, it's cheap. To the phones to Lidwin in St. Paul. Hi. Thanks so much for waiting. Good to have you on the show.
I'm just sitting here getting cracked up by listening to all the stuff that people are calling in. Thank you so much for the show. But hey, I got an Army experience when I joined the Army. I grew up here, born and raised here in Minnesota all my life. And I didn't realize how bad the word "yah" instead of "yes" was ingrained in my whole everything I said was "yah" instead of "yes." Well, anyway, so I'm in basic training. My drill sergeant, she'd get me in these conversations, and I'd wind up saying "yah" instead of "yes." Well, boom, down I'd go, knocking out 30 push-ups. Right?
Jeez! So
every time she said she was going to break me. By the end of basic training, she was going to break me of "yah." And, you know, I was supposed to say "yes, drill sergeant." So I was getting real good at it, you know, doing push-ups. And all of a sudden, you know, I hadn't said "yah" in a really long time. And she'd get me in a conversation, see, on purpose, just to see, you know, pretty soon, boom, "yah," there I'd go.
And we find it in books, too, Y-A-H, of course, "yah." It can be from German, too, because the German for "yes" is "yeah." And I don't know what the origin is, but of course in Minnesota it's so common indeed. And all our mannerisms, call them mannerisms, not the best word, are funny to outsiders. And everybody else's language is weird. Of course, we are the norm. Everybody else is a pervert.
Gregory says here, the Michigan shook might be related to the French-Canadian toque, which sounds like took. Oh, good point. With our caller from Michigan.
Quite possible.
That really makes a lot
quite
of sense.
Quite possible.
Colleen says, I don't like when people say realtor versus realtor, which I said earlier this week, and a bunch of people tweeted at me, and she says jewelry for jewelry. Heard the first on NPR this week from Carrie. Right on. I did say that.
Yes.
I have this tendency to... I add
very
another
common
syllable, like nuclear.
Nuclear.
Remember that?
Nuclear is, of course, a famous example, of course.
Yes, so I need to be
careful.
And
jewelry and so on, also very well known.
Yes. Hey, Anatoly, it will not be so long before we see you again. How's that for a bunch of negatives? And you bet. Thank you. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.